Drex on the next generation of KGO.
A10. Are you done with your day-to-day drudgery? Tired of the 9-to-5 salt mine?
My job, don't get me started on, because it really annoys me.
Take this job and shove it.
Take this job and shove it.
Work, 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 work. You send me happy work, 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 work.
I wish I had a job that I could just leave.
The Gallup survey estimates that workers who are actively disengaged are just going through the motions.
Why don't you put down your ginger ale and red book and get to work?
Go back to work.
Work, 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 work. You send me happy work, 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 work.
Working for the weekend.
Can't wait till Friday.
We are going to have so much fun this weekend.
Work, 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 work.
Well, let's get to it.
Work, 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 work. You see me do me da, 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 da. Something better. Work, 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 work.
Happy Friday. Hope you have a great weekend.
Oh, it's Friday. We're heading into the weekend.
This is going to be awesome.
And away we go on the Drex Radio Show, live and local in the Bay and around the world at KGORadio.com. By the way, just so you know, people who get pissed off about work are less likely to quit their jobs. So, you know, popping a sprocket isn't necessarily a bad thing. Yelling and screaming, not necessarily a bad thing. This study has found that people who get pissed off about stuff at work are less likely to quit because it's a sign that they actually care about their career in the company and they take pride in their work. So when you hear yelling and screaming, that person's there forever.
Damn it.
77% of all Americans were happy at work. Is it the Stockholm Syndrome? I don't know.
I think it might be.
Might be? It's Friday. I can say that. Believe it or not, 77% of Americans are happy with their work. That's the third highest percentage in the world. Only the people in India and Mexico are happier at work than us. Jeez, and so why's Trump got a problem? Maybe they should build the wall so we can't go there.
Might be.
If they're happier.
Mm-hmm.
The Mexican government should think that out. Okay, a lot going on today. We're going to talk movies with Tim Sika coming up. It's the 30th anniversary of Top Gun, and it really, really, really was a big deal 30 years ago. I forgot how much of a big deal it was. Also, we'll talk about the best superhero movies of all time and Star Wars Rogue One, already in trouble. There's some bad rumors floating around about that movie. And I want to start with something incredible today, and then we'll get to we're going to get to Steph Mojis and all of those things. Shaquille O'Neal was in the building today. Now, I've never met Shaq. I've seen him on television. I've almost met him a few times, but today I met the man. He was in the I guess he was here at Cumulus. He was doing a podcast with Tolbert or something, and perhaps on being on KNBR, our sister station, our sports station. But he was singing, and I got to play this to you. So take a listen to Shaq.
Me too.
You guys listen to Cyndi Lauper?
No, me. Well, of course I do.
See, time there you go. You're a good man.
Of course. Reaching across the land, the moon is down there without you. Black people never know the words, Tom.
They just hum along. I'm surprised you did. Very nice. Very nice. You could do me a drop, little girls just want to have fun on me.
Girls just want to have fun.
There you go. I'll be your Captain Lou Albano.
That was great. So I just said hello to him on the way out, and that was it. And he didn't even see me. But you can't help but see him. So I had you look up the facts because I couldn't believe it. He's 7'1". He weighs 325 pounds. I mean, he's one of the heaviest players ever to play in the NBA. He played for six teams throughout his 19-year NBA career. Absolutely an amazing man. He's a gentle giant. He's a wonderful human being. He's funny as hell. And the only thing that I was thinking about is the whole celebrity fame thing. And, you know, in my mind, I was A-B-ing him with David Letterman, who is such an introvert that as soon as, and he, by the way, Dave was always an introvert, okay? And Shaq is, I think, is an extrovert, it seems to me. I mean, he seems to dig it, and that's a good thing. Because to get to my point is this. So David Letterman is such an introvert that he, you know, grew that beard and became Santa Claus so that no one would recognize him. And it works, all right? So Dave pretty much can go anywhere he wants, and nobody will know it's him. Because, quite frankly, he doesn't want to talk to any of us. Or you.
Bah humbug.
Yeah, that's the way it is. But that's okay. That's Dave. All right. But I was thinking about this with Shaquille O'Neal. He seems so comfortable in himself, and that's a good thing, because there's no escaping this. There's no getting out of it. That man, he'd have to duck to get through the door. I mean, I was blown away. I don't know if I've seen a human being that big. Did we figure out what size shoes he wears?
24.
Oh, my God.
Take that, Trump.
I mean, I'm just amazed. So I was thinking about this. Can you imagine? And I think the guy's worth like $500 million. And so what a great thing it is to have accomplished all these incredible things in one's life and be Shaquille O'Neal. But on the other hand, you're pretty much a prisoner in your own life, unless you choose not to be. And I think he chooses not to be. I mean, he just rolls with being Shaq. Yeah. And I think that's a good thing, because if you are an introvert, for instance, like I am or Dave is, I don't think that would work. I think it would drive you bananas. Because
crazy,
he can't go anywhere.
He's hiding.
He's Shaquille O'Neal.
It's like trying to hide an elephant.
Now, remember yesterday I was playing you the audio of him being an Uber driver, okay? And that in itself was insane. Let me see if I can find that. And now I want to know how 7'1" Shaq how could he fit in the damn car? It was amazing. Okay, here he is. Let me see.
My name is Pierre.
Hey, Pierre.
Lyft driver.
Tu parles français?
Speaking no French. How are you?
Good. I'm Heather.
My name is Goose. My real job is I'm a cop. I'm off duty right now, but I still keep an eye out for stuff. Look at this. Illegal U-turn in the middle of the street. Lucky I ain't got my badge, lady.
I don't know a thing about basketball.
You know about free throws? Spread your fingers out, and then follow through. Watch your nails. I don't want you to do your nails, though. Do it 10 times. You know what? You just learned from the greatest free throw coach of all time. I want to play ball, but I run funny. My pants get stuck in my butt.
You look like the basketball type that I can get down on the court a little bit.
Nah, man. I had hoop dreams, but that didn't work out.
He's bigger than the damn Prius.
I look familiar to you.
Oh, my gosh.
You ever seen my face?
Oh, my God.
Sky's off.
Oh, my God. It's me.
It's me.
No, you didn't.
I didn't know it was you at all.
My favorite Laker player is Kobe.
You can't get off the court.
I'm about to brag to everybody today.
What? Well, right on. So he was disguised as a French guy and an undercover cop and a Jamaican. Now, I don't care. You would just have to see this guy today or at the Warriors game, and then you'll understand what I'm saying. There's no way you don't know that Shaquille O'Neal.
I liked his Jamaican accent. That was very humorous.
It was great. So hats off to him.
Had some hoop dreams.
And our dreams came true last night. Warriors win 104-89.
Lowest scoring game of the season for Thompson and Curry combined. Yet they win by 15.
Oh, they had to throw that in.
Eastern Conference champions. Warriors take game one courtesy of their bench. The final score. Golden State 104 and Cleveland 89.
See, this is one of the things about the national press that you know, bites our ass. Even though we won, they had to point out that the 104-89 score was the lowest scoring game of the season for Steph and for Clay together. I mean, was that necessary?
But they still won by 15 points.
Yes, it's not necessary.
That's their job, statisticians.
Here's Jimmy Kimmel last night talking about the high prices of the NBA final tickets.
You know, ticket prices for the finals are up from last year. The average price for a ticket to game one in Oakland was $1,625 a seat. The cheapest seats way up in the bleachers are going for around $650, which isn't bad when you consider Steph Curry will probably be shooting three-pointers from those seats. But
and then the other great thing Kimmel did last night was he had the NBA stars read their mean tweets about themselves.
One day, Klay Thompson is going to leave the house without remembering to attach his goatee that he bought from Party City. And it'll be out there.
Does anyone know what Blake Griffin is? Did Morgan Freeman and Carrot Top impregnate an Amazon or what?
Andre Iguodala has the worst body language of anyone in the NBA. If he got a dollar for every dirty look he made, he'd have another 80 million.
Russell Westbrook looked like Jar Jar Binks. I'll take your word for it. I don't know who that is, but sure.
Pretty sure Reggie Miller's ears provide Wi-Fi. Oh, my God. They do.
Doc Rivers' voice is ashy as hell. Put some lotion on those voice cords, bro.
Magic Johnson looks like a bald, black John Travolta.
Have you ever been downloading something online and halfway through it just froze and couldn't go anywhere?
Think Steph Curry's puberty.
That's good. No, think Steph Curry, Steph Moji, selling for $1.99. He's, well, he's competing with the Kardashians, Kim Moji app now. I'd rather have his. Anyway, you can get it today. And let me see here. So he's got 5.5 million followers on Twitter. His Facebook page, nearly 6 million likes. And Instagram, 11 million followers. So the competition's on. Get your Steph Moji today. All right, let's take a break and we'll be back. We're going to talk movies, what's happening with the weekend scene here in just a minute. Oh, and I'm such a fan of Elon Musk. Yesterday, he talked about the fact that we are in the Matrix. We just don't know it. He does. I just think it's brilliant. We're already in it.
Are you Keanu Reeves?
No, we all are.
Oh, dear. I'm a little afraid.
All right. Yes, you should be very afraid. All right. All on the way on the Drex Radio Show on KGOA 10. With a look at traffic, here's Lee Graham.
You're listening to the Drex Radio Show.
Drex Radio Show.
On the next generation of KGOA 10.
You may not know it, but it's true. I don't know why you're coming. Oh, I love Cindy. I know, yeah. Shaq was singing Cyndi Lauper. Is she still doing Kinky Boots? Yes. My girlfriend went to see Kinky Boots, the Broadway musical that was in town. I think it's left, but yeah, she said it was fantastic. We ready to go with Mr. Sika. All right, we'll get to the Matrix coming up here. All right, Tim Sika is our guy to talk about movies. And Tim, good evening. Thank you for joining us.
Good evening, Mr. Drex. How are you? It was touch and go there for a while. You know, I'm here in, I wanted to come to actually see you in the studio, but I'm here at the 15th annual San Francisco Doc Fest, and I'm in the middle of moderating this discussion. And so anyway, yeah, so yeah, you got me, and we're going to talk movies.
Okay, great. So I wanted to ask you, since you're at the Doc Fest, are they showing the Michael Vick documentary that's coming out in July?
You know, I don't have the schedule with me, but right. I do know that tonight one of the things they're going to show, and it's the first time it's going to be shown on a screen, is a movie called Trump Rally, and that's what it is. The filmmaker got into a Donald Trump rally a couple months ago and just filmed what he saw, and no narration, nothing. And it's quite something. Let me tell you. You know, he was in San Jose yesterday.
Yes, and all hell broke loose. Unjustifiably so. Yeah,
but that wasn't a surprise.
No. Well, it's just ugly, and I don't think it's necessary. You know, or he's the provocateur, of course, but he started it. But that doesn't mean that we have to be nasty too. We just had somebody calling and yelling at Chip a while ago about this, and I'm saying, well, you know. We don't have to do the same thing that he provokes, but
I agree. I agree with you. We don't have to be on that level.
No, throwing eggs and cold cocking people. I just think it's bad news. But I wanted to ask you now, this Trump documentary that you're talking about, would that be like Showtime's The Circus? Have you been watching that at all?
No, I haven't. Actually, this is a film that was directed by this indie filmmaker named Sean Dunn. And what Sean's done is he makes all of his films available for free online on his website.
Nice.
He makes commercials for companies like Nike and Sundance and stuff like that. And that's how he earns a living. But he makes these very, very interesting documentaries about people who you would, if you sort of maybe either saw on the street or you just, you know, rubbed elbows in public, you might wonder, like, well, who are these people? And when you watch these movies, you get this sense that, you know, he creates this sort of undertone of empathy with these movies. And you kind of, in some kind of weird, twisted way, although I haven't seen it with the Trump movie yet, you kind of see yourself in some of these people that who are, you know, on the quote-unquote fringe of society. And he just makes very, very interesting films. I'm going to ask him in about, you know, half an hour, you know, where the empathy might be with these Trump folks, because that one was hard for me to get around, watching these people talk about why they were there, why they were voting for the man. You know, none of it made a whole lot of, like, outward sense.
Angry white man syndrome. I know it.
Well, and there's a lot of angry white women, too.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And and by the way, I do want to tell you, since you and I are, we've got this synchronicity thing going on with docs, I watched Wiener, The Rise and Fall of Anthony Wiener, and
yeah,
it was spectacular. I mean, oh my God, at the point when Anthony Wiener said, I can't believe I'm letting them do this documentary about me falling on my face, I just about crapped my pants. I thought, this is off the scale wonderful. So if you love documentaries, it's on cable. Just rent it.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. We talked about it at length last week. I thought it was just phenomenal
it
on
is.
So many levels. Yeah, it's just terrific.
All right. So let's start with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Out of the Shadows. Well, I have the short clip here. Let's play that.
Okay. This is going to be good.
Dude, bringing back the mohawk. Good for you.
Oh, y'all got jokes, huh?
Why are we going with the turtles? When something bad happens, you want to be with the turtles.
I love the tricky. I love the Beastie Boys. So yeah. Tyler Perry, Megan Fox, Brad Garrett, what do you think?
Right. Four fictional teenage anthropomorphic turtles who are named after four Renaissance Italian artists, right?
Right.
Donatello, Michelangelo, Leonardo and Raphael. Yeah, they're back in the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Out of the Shadows. Not that they ever really left. But having missed the 2014 reboot, all I can say is, have these Ninja Turtles movies become slicker and more technologically polished and savvy than ever before, or what? In this one, Tyler Perry, of all people, plays a mad scientist recruited by the Shredder. Now, isn't that a great name for a villain, the Shredder?
Right.
He's the main antagonist of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and Tyler Perry's hired this guy to create mutants of his own so that he can take over New York City and, by extension, the world. And, you know, I think I'm beginning to sound like a broken record on your show, Drex, but this latest Ninja Turtles installment is yet another beneficiary or victim, depending upon your point of view, of this CGI orgasmic miasma that seems to have overtaken Hollywood movies and, by extension, the multiplexes. What's even to say about this movie? The best part of it for me was sitting there watching it, and just as I was about to become numbed, you know, once again by the CGI orgasmic miasma, who walks onto the screen playing a police officer with gusto, bravado, and a somewhat tongue-in-cheek stance? None other than that great actress of the stage and screen, Laura Linney.
Oh.
So I know. So that was great fun, watching this great actress appear out of the blue and reoccurringly pop up in this film playing this role with such seriousness to the point where you keep pinching yourself, saying things like, I can't believe Laura Linney is in this movie. What is Laura Linney even doing in this movie?
Does she need to pay the rent? What's going on? How expensive is Malibu?
I have a feeling she got a nice paycheck. But, you know, this movie is exactly what the title says. You know what you're going to get when you walk into the theater. It's kind of fun. It's got this Transformers thing vibe happening with it, insofar as it's massive and epic and stuff. It culminates in a real spectacular action set piece. It's reasonably enjoyable. It's a bit overlong at 10 minutes less 2 hours. Kids will probably like it. Adults, I don't know. I wish as a movie it had a little more for adults, you know, which is to say a little more irony, maybe a little more bite, maybe some in-jokes, but you know, it doesn't, and I don't know if the ending is indicative of anything. There's another sequel coming. I would see it in 3D IMAX if you can, you know.
With the kids, right, yeah.
Yeah, and I just can't escape in my mind one of the film's final images, the Laura Linney, awarding all four of the Ninja Turtles a medal for saving New York City. It's just surreal.
All right, right on. And you were right about Alice Through the Looking Glass. My God, we're rated 29% on Rotten Tomatoes, and... Johnny Depp's having a bad week. Hell no. Not after what the review you gave. No.
Johnny Depp is having a bad week in his professional life and private life. Absolutely.
Yeah. And you know what? I have to start to believe, or at least think, Tim, that this whole Tim Burton, Johnny Depp marriage and movie thing, that needs to be shaken up a little bit. Do you think so? I'm not sure I get it all the time. Why do they always have to work together?
Well, you know, they probably understand each other on some kind of artistic level. They're both kind of, and I mean this with great affection, they're both kind of oddballish in their own ways, you know. they probably, you know, they probably just relate to each other on that level. I think
I just think it's tired.
Well, yeah. Well, it seems like it's getting that way, doesn't it? Yeah.
All right, let's take a break here and we'll let you grab a drink while you're at your Doc Fest, and we'll come back and we'll talk about some more movies. Emilia Clarke from Game of Thrones with Me Before You and the pop star Never Stop Stopping. That's on the way on the Drex Radio Show on KGOA 10. But first, with a look at traffic, Lee Graham.
KGO, the next generation of KGO 810. Now, back to the Drex Radio Show. Drex Radio Show.
Timothy. Tim Sika is my guest, San Francisco Film Critics Circle president and celluloiddreams.net founder. Tim Sika talks movies, and we're talking about movies. I want to talk about, I have to tell you, Disney's had an endless summer of a number of Star Wars movies in the pipeline, and it should be easy money, assuming they don't run out of ideas, Tim, doing the same story over and over again. But there's just one movie in now, and the New York Post says Disney is already freaking out over Rogue One, the Star Wars story. It's supposed to come out in December, and it's a standalone that takes place between the first two trilogies, episodes 3 and 4, and sources say the higher-ups don't like the rough cut, and it isn't testing well. So they've ordered 4 weeks of very expensive reshoots over the summer to fix it. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I didn't even know that. That's interesting. When I hear these stories, I mean, the cynical part of me wonders just a little bit if it's not something maybe generated by the internal public relations department for publicity. I don't know. You know, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, don't you I think Star Wars is such a sacrosanct project that it would be interesting to know what it was they thought was not so good about it. If the story went into a little more depth that way, I might tend to believe it. But it's like, well, what does that mean? They didn't like it. They didn't like the tone.
Well,
of
didn't
it.
Test didn't like well it. Or something.
They obviously okayed the script and everything. So, and if they had agreed, and I'm sure to some extent it was the filmmakers were contractually obliged to film what was in the script. I don't know why they're freaking out over it. And who are they showing it to, I wonder?
Right, and for what it's worth, The Force Awakens, they had several reshoots. So
yeah, they did. You're right.
Stuff
about
happens.
That. Yeah,
right.
And you know, this is de rigueur for these kinds of movies. I thought they were doing that less, especially with sort of pre-sold properties like Star Wars, but. You know, you would think that, the money men get a little antsy when they think that maybe they're only going to make $1.2 billion instead of $1.4 billion, you know? They get a little antsy,
what's the number behind the one, right?
Yeah, really. It still drives me nuts that they're, like, complaining about Batman v Superman, and it just making under $1 billion. Oh, geez, oh, man. I mean, what is under $1 billion? As opposed to $1 billion. But the money at that level seems to me so abstract that why is that even something that they're.
I know. I could even live
about.
In Palo Alto with that kind of money. I mean, come on. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, I could too. Yeah.
All right. Let's talk
about the loft in San Francisco. Yeah.
Hey, man. Yes, we could actually live in the city and have more than a 2-bedroom squatter pad. Okay.
That's right.
Yeah. All right. I guess the next one we should go to is Me Before You. It's in theaters this weekend, and it's a romantic drama, right? And I do.
Right.
Right. Let me play the brief clip here. Let's take a
look. You try the Chicken Factory.
I'm still having nightmares about those giblets.
We try Beautician.
Turns out hot wax is not my friend.
I'm running out of options for you here, Louisa.
Please, I'll take anything.
And this is new care and companionship for a disabled man.
Do you have any experience of caregiving?
I've never done it, but I'm sure I could learn. You've got good morning. Oh, he hates me. Every time I speak, he looks at me like I'm stupid. To be fair, you are pretty stupid.
Yeah, but he doesn't know that yet.
All right, immediately I'm thinking Emilia Clarke of Game of Thrones, okay? And then the dude from Hunger Games. Yeah, Finnick.
Right, you're right. That's right. Yeah. Emilia Clarke plays, she plays the Mother of Dragons, I think, in Game of Thrones. But yeah, this is a drama weepy, purposely designed at every step of the way to make you cry over the angst and the pain and the something that looks like love, which just overflows in the narrative and with these characters. Also weepy because, you know, at the press screening I attended, the security who were checking us in, you know, after they wanded us and all that, and made us, like, you know, turn our cell phones off and stuff, they actually handed us boxes of tissue with the film's logo on it.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to give my hand away here, but I never did tear open the box of tissues once. But anyway, this movie centers on this very wealthy, strapping, sports adept guy's guy, played by Sam Claflin of the Hunger Games movies, as you mentioned, who's met with this tragic accident that renders him paraplegic. And he gives up on life. He decides to leave the woman he was going to marry, and much to the endless consternation of his mother, played by Janet McTeer, he basically is just counting the days. You know, he's endlessly depressed. He's going through a series of caregivers until one day in pops Amelia Clark. And wouldn't you know it, she's as perky, peppy, klutzy, cute, and happy as they come. And long story short, guess who falls in love? Well, this movie, Me Before You, I gotta admit, was it was anything but boring or dull, probably because it was so off-the-rails romantic drama, weepy, that it was kind of fun just going with it. It hits all the romantic drama beats that these films need to hit in order to deliver what the trailers promise audiences who like these films are going to get. The problem was that if you just start for a second thinking about what you're watching, you kind of become aghast at the superficiality of it all. There's some really interesting ideas in the film, the class divide between the two characters. You know, she comes from this hard scrabble family that they live check to check, and he's this, like, you know, wealthy millionaire, billionaire guy. There's the internal psychological pain that the main male character is experiencing is something that's interesting, but none of that is explored in any real depth. And the plot resolution, which only seemed to be there so that the Amelia Clark character could have this, like, scene at the end of the movie reading this letter from her beloved while finally making it to Paris, a place where she always wanted to go, she's reading this letter from her boyfriend who, has, I don't know if I should say this. Well, he does something tragic. He decides he's going to end his life. And so I don't know what that's saying to people who, you know, it's basically saying that the only option paraplegics or quadriplegics have after once, you know, having experienced the full use of their arms and legs, the only one they have is to tragically end it all. Right. And worst of all, again, if you stop and momentarily think about what you're watching for a second, you wonder, you know, well, what are these characters? Do these characters really love each other? Did they ever really love each other? Or are they just in love with the idea of being in love? And if that's what this movie is all about, why, you know, on God's green earth are we watching it? I like a good romantic weepy. I did enjoy this movie. I think if you're a dyed-in-the-wool fan of this particular genre, and the audience I saw it with seemed to really like it. They laughed and they cried in all the right places. Nothing I said is probably going to dissuade you from seeing Me Before You, but I suspect the book, which was a bestseller, had more of an opportunity to maybe address some of my complaints. I haven't read it, but book to screenplay adaptations can be tricky. But, you know, who knows? I may have been more critical of the movie had I read the book first. So there's that to think about. But, you know, I don't know. I mean, I've seen all of this before.
Okay.
You know?
Well, that brings me to this, which is a great lead-in, and this might be straight-up blasphemy to a lot of people, but hey, sometimes the movie is better than the book. So let me run by you some of these ideas, and you tell me.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll start with number one. Here they are in chronological order. Psycho from 1960. The movie was better than the book.
I think the movie was better than the book. The book is really good. It's almost like a short story. It's not a particularly long book. It's a good book, but Hitchcock just made it unforgettable. I mean, you read the book and you go, you know, this is disturbing, but Hitchcock changed the way people looked at movies. He, for the first time in the history of movies, this was 1960, he killed his star one-third of the way into the picture, and that's what killed audiences, shocked them, because not only did this brutal shower murder just come out of the blue, but it killed, you know, Janet Leigh was sliced to death, and people were going, this can't happen. This really didn't happen, but it did happen.
It did happen.
You know, he did this thing where he told theater managers, you know, you can't let people into the movie once it starts. And before that, people would come whenever. you know, and then they would stay to see what they missed at the next showing because they did these continuous showings. But yeah, Psycho for sure. Better movie than a book.
And by the way, that is the number one one. Number two is The Graduate from 1967.
Ooh, yeah. It's a different movie. I mean, the Benjamin Braddock in the book is a kind of a blonde, kind of a Robert Redford type wasp. And so Mike Nichols really cast against type by casting Dustin Hoffman, who was anything but that.
Right,
but
yeah,
He was brilliant. He created a classic character, in some ways more nuanced than the book. Yeah, I would say... I agree. I would say The Graduate movie is better than The Graduate book.
Forgot about that. I forgot that Mike Nichols did that movie.
Oh, yeah. That was No, he had done Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf the year before, and that was the second movie. And he won the Academy Award that year for Best Director. Yeah.
Unbelievable. Yeah. Okay, well, we'll run some more by you as we take a break, and we'll be back with... We'll also talk about the pop star Never Stop Stopping with Adam Sandberg. Yeah, that's the boy band thing.
Yeah,
yes.
That's a good movie, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Let's take a break, and we'll be back with Tim Sika on the Drex Radio Show on KGO 810.
Drex on KGO 810.
All right, we're back, and we're talking about movies on the Drex Radio Show with Tim Sika. So let me see here. The Lonely Island movie Pop Star is out this weekend. Seal helps with a wedding proposal, then gets attacked by wolves. Let's take a listen to this.
Ash and I have been hanging out for about 6 months now.
She's the total package.
Ashley Wednesday.
Are those real wolves?
Yes.
Is that a seal?
Invited the press. What's going on?
Will you marry me?
Yes.
The wolves are
Are you okay?
I've been in this situation before. I think I got these scars.
From wolves?
Now let's get out of here.
We killed Seal.
He's dead.
He's dead.
Seal is dead.
I don't know where this is going, Tim. So Adam Sandberg plays a former boy band member who's desperate to stay relevant after his solo album flops.
Yeah, that scene is just one of the many mad, crazy, insane, and hugely smart things about this pop star movie. This is a parody of the contemporary pop music scene, I guess the hip-hop rap music scene, I guess. But it focuses on a white rapper, brilliantly played by Andy Samberg, and it's about his white hip-hop group and how when he goes solo, he breaks up the group. And you mentioned it was written, directed, stars the comedy trio, The Lonely Island.
Right.
And it is just nuts. But it's extremely smart. Smart in the very same way that Christopher Guest's This is Spinal Tap and A Mighty Wind were smart. Both of those films, and this one too in particular, were brilliant in how much they knew about the subject matter and acutely knowing of the real music, the real world, and the real fans that they – We're satirizing and parodying, and that's a pop star. It's so self-aware of itself that it's like breathtaking and hilarious. The songs in this movie are genius, and they may be the best reason to see Pop Star. As genre hip-hop rap songs, they're really good in and of themselves. As satires of those songs, they're even better. I mean, you're gagging with laughter over these things because there's all these multiple layers at work. There's a pro gay marriage song, for one, being sung by the pop star. His name's Connor for real. He's played by Andy Samberg in the movie, and where he keeps saying, you know, over and over again, and over and over and over, that he himself isn't gay. There's a song that uses the killing of Osama bin Laden as a metaphor for great sex. Which is a total scream. And that one's on YouTube, by the way, so I encourage people to check that one out. The unexpurgated version is the one they want to hear. But the other thing about Pop Star is that there's this there's a push-pull kind of subtext of affection slash contempt almost for the subject matter going on in the film from the filmmakers. It's sort of unique for a mockumentary of this kind. Usually these kinds of comedies, they stem from the creators' like total love and affection for what they're satirizing. But Pop Star seems to have Pop Star has that, certainly with regard to the music, but there's also this simultaneous sense of loathsomeness and contempt going on underneath for the business of it all. You know, the media's insane and obsessive coverage of all the superficial aspects of the business of it all. You know, when celebrities take all these, like people like Justin Bieber, when they take all these selfies of themselves and stuff like that, from media outlets like TMZ, who are made to look like insane inbreds in this movie.
self-absorbed.
Yes. Oh my God. to the nth degree.
Yes.
And the other thing too is there's some great cameos of real life musicians like Ringo Starr and Mariah Carey and Usher and the RZA.
Wow,
and
nice.
Ringo Starr, and they're all playing themselves. Justin Timberlake plays a personal chef to Connor for real in another screen performance that demonstrates what a versatile actor he can be. He's really good with comedy. So for all these reasons, I think this movie, Pop Star Never Stopping, is definitely worth checking out. And in the theater with an audience if you can. It opened today, and of course in the Bay Area, but it opened nationwide as well. So I think it's going to be a big hit.
Well, I'm glad that you said that, because sometimes movies like this are better seen in the theater because, you know, the laughter becomes infectious if you're watching
exactly.
The right movie, right? Yeah.
Exactly. And this one, I think if I would have been watching it myself, I would have been chuckling all the way through. But I saw it with a great audience who just got the other thing, too. Sometimes audience members will get things that you didn't get, and they're laughing and laughing or doing whatever. And you're going, what is it? And you're, oh, God. Oh, I missed that. Ha, ha, ha. So you can even, you know, find more humor sometimes in a movie like this when there's people around you, like, laughing their butts off. You know?
It's a good reminder of why we need to go to the theater every once in a while. Yeah, because it's not always. I can tell you watching The Martian. Yeah, I watched it at home. Yeah, and I was really disappointed. It's like, damn, I should have watched this in the theater because it just was not the same.
Yeah, sometimes the communal experience really gives the movie something that, you know, it obviously lacks when you're just watching it on an iPad or something, you know.
All right, well, let's... I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say, which more and more people seem to be doing. You know, one of my students recently was watching Ben-Hur on an iPhone. Ben-Hur.
Oh, gosh.
You know, the big spectacle Ben-Hur.
Yes, yeah.
I know. It's like, well, whatever. He liked it. He said he liked the story. It's like, okay, that's cool.
Wow.
You know.
All right. Well, I wanted to go back to the BuzzFeed.com. The movie is better than the book. So we talked about Psycho and The Graduate. Yeah. What do you think about The Godfather? Because that they say that the movie was better than the book. I think some people might argue with that one.
Well, originally I disagreed with that because I thought I loved the book and I just had certain ideas about what I thought the movie was going to be, and the movie was different. The movie did not play as riveting to me in my mind as the book did. But I think now, I don't know if it's a good question. I don't know if it's better than the book, but I think it's a masterpiece. I think it's one of the top 10. I did a top 10 list recently, and that was like the Godfather 1 and Godfather 2 were in my number 9 slot. I just think the movie is a masterpiece.
Right, and 1972. And it's like, a fine wine. It ages well, yes.
Yeah, it ages well, and you can watch it anytime. If it's one of those movies that we've talked about this before, too. It's one of those movies that when it's on TV, if you're channel surfing, and you land on it, you go, oh, I'm going to watch a couple minutes of this. And then no matter where you've started it, you wind up watching it to the end because you get so hooked on it. The Godfather, for me, is one of those movies.
Okay.
And I think it's a great movie.
Yeah. Okay, so Jaws is obviously the better movie. The Shining, you and I have had this discussion many times. As much as Stephen King hated the movie, he was wrong. Stanley Kubrick nailed it. But let me ask, yeah, we agree on that. What about number 7, Stand By Me from 1986? I just thought, I love the movie.
The movie was really great, and I didn't read the book, so I can't really compare the
either.
Two. But the movie was very, very special, and it's one of those movies that it's sort of, at least for me, it was a seminal emotional experience watching that movie. It was unique and poetic, and Rob Reiner, you know, a great director, an underrated director. I think he brought. You know, you mentioned Kubrick and The Shining. I mean, Kubrick changed The Shining, but I think, you know, The Shining novel was pulp. Stephen King tends to write pulp. I don't know what Stand By Me as a book would be like, but I suspect that, Rob Reiner in the movie version found the poetry that maybe was, sort of like, you know, shoved under the carpet in the book. I don't know. I'm speculating, but the movie was great. I love the movie too. I agree with you there.
Yeah, I hope by now Stephen King has gotten over himself with The Shining.
You know, they remade it for TV, and boy,
that was awful.
That movie sucked. It was awful.
Yes.
Especially when you compared it with the Kubrick. It was like,
you can't touch
God.
Kubrick. Clockwork Orange is number three too. So you know that's the other one from 71.
And you know, Anthony Burgess hated the film when he saw it. He saw it at a screening with his wife, and his wife wanted to get up in the middle of the screening. She kept nudging him and saying, you know, this is not your novel. I don't know what this is. This is not your novel. Let's go.
Novel.
And he's going, we can't go. We've got to be polite, you know. But book was different. Yeah, the book was different. But Kubrick made a masterpiece with the film. Yeah.
Okay, Tim Seca, I've got to wrap, but thank you very much and have fun at the Doc Festival and let me know what's going on next weekend.
Oh, I will. And please, everybody, check out the SF 15th Annual SF Doc Festival. It runs now through June 16th at the Roxy Theater and a couple other theaters in San Francisco. And if you can go to